Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. In recent years, libraries have taken hit after funding hit, but this summer topped them all. And now, recent numbers, record numbers of Ohio libraries are asking voters for more money to staunch the bleeding. Like many school districts, also in dire straits, many of the libraries are just trying to restore service levels from the past year. They don't even hope for the halcyon days of the 1980s, before the state started to freeze its funding stream to the libraries. Joining me today in the studio to talk about the crisis is Bexley Public Library Interim Director, Susan Studebaker. Welcome, Susan.
Good morning.
And also Doug Evans. He's the Executive Director of the Ohio Library Council. Doug, thanks for being here.
Good morning.
And then also Sue Ellen Goldsberry, the Director of the Pickerington Public Library. Welcome, Sue Ellen.
Thank you.
Now, just to be real clear, well, I fixed my microphone there. Okay. Just to be real clear, the Bexley and the Pickerington are independent of the Columbus metropolitan system.
That is correct.
Sometimes a lot of people don't know that because it's such a big system, mm-hmm. and folks aren't sure. So you're operating very independently, and you had to make your own decisions about budget cuts. Doug, could you kind of give us an overview of how funding levels have been frozen and cut and when that all started? Because this budget cut this summer was sort of the not even the grand finale, apparently. There's probably more to come, but it was the big one.
Sure. The public libraries in the state of Ohio are funded by a percentage of the state's general tax revenue. And up until this past summer when the latest state budget was implemented, it was 2.22% of the state's general revenue tax, and that was effective in the last interim budget or in the last budget. The amount of state funding has decreased over the last few years because of the state's tax revenue has decreased as a result of the state's economy and along with the nation's economy. So we've seen that decrease coming, but when in the first 6 months of 2009, we saw a decrease of about 20% of the for library funding in the state. And when the budget was passed this summer by the legislature, we saw a decrease of about another 11% as a result of a change in the formula from 2.22% to 1.97%. So the libraries right now throughout the state are struggling to deal with that new reduction in or continued reduction in funding and how to deal with that in their particular operational situations.
And as it stands right now, that's permanent.
That is actually an interim or a temporary reduction, and the thought being that it would go back to 2.22 if the state's economy recovers. But right now, we're all anxiously waiting to see that happen.
Susan, your predecessor said something to me last spring that sort of stuck with me, that even if you get to that point where you recover, you get back to where you were, wherever that was, I guess the good old days, that there's been so much lost in the interim that it wouldn't be like it'd be going one step forward after two steps back.
That's really it. One of the things that really strikes me about the library cuts is once you have to cut your materials budget and you have years of not buying new books, it's really hard to go back and fill the collection in and bring the strength back to a library collection.
Is that your experience too, Sue Ellen?
Exactly. We've been cutting our materials budget since 2001. So those are some years we're not going to be able to make up.
Now, materials budget is sort of jargony. So when we think of books, we think book, you know, libraries, books. But when you talk about materials, what are you talking about in terms of these cuts?
Well, everything the library has, electronic resources, which are so convenient for users because many of those they can use from their home without even having to leave the house to use the library. Magazines, newspapers, all of the visual arts, the CDs, DVDs, picture books, readers that help children become readers, every part of the collection.
Tell me, Susan, how the Bexley Library, what the Bexley Library has cut now in response to the summer state budget.
Well, the library has been reducing their expenditures for the last 5 years and even more than that. They have, over that five-year period, cut 25% of their staff, and they are very lean on the staffing side. But their most recent cut has been the materials budget. They've reduced it by 50% or $100,000. And the Board of Trustees at Bexley decided that they would put a lot of faith in the success of this levy and have borrowed from the Rainy Day Fund to make it through the end of the year and have not cut additional staff or hours yet.
Tell us about the levy request.
1.5 mil. The first time. They went for a bond issue about 20 years ago to help remodel and expand the building. This is the first time the Bexley community has been asked to support the library.
That's kind of amazing. It's 80 years old?
It's 80 years old. We just had a wonderful event to celebrate that birthday.
Happy birthday.
Thank you.
How about you, Sue Ellen, and over in Pickerington?
Well, we have reduced operating hours. Previously, we had been open 68 hours a week. We're now open 47. We have reduced our staff numbers from 29 in 2001, which I referred to previously, to 17. We have cut our materials budget. We have increased the employees' contribution to their health insurance plan. We don't even put paper towels in the public restrooms right now.
Okay. Is it easier to make cuts when you're independent of the how do you feel about – do you have more freedom to do things like not put paper towels in the public restrooms that they wouldn't have if they're dealing with a big operation?
Cuts are never easy.
Okay.
Doesn't matter how large your library system is. They're never easy. It's a challenge.
How long do you feel like you've been living on a shoestring at the library?
For Pickerington, it's been since 2004, really, because in 2004 we lost several thousand dollars a year to a previously private library in
the
county.
You were affiliated with the Fairfield?
We're in Fairfield County, yes, and a previously private library became public, and so we lost a considerable amount of funding that year to that library. So since that point, we have been on a shoestring. We have continually reduced and made cuts.
How many is this your first levy?
It is.
Okay.
It is. We did have a bond issue in 91 to build the facility that we're in. But the Pickerington Library is actually 100 years old this year.
Yeah, and, right.
Yes. And will be the first operating levy also.
Doug, there's a lot of first-timers out there operating levies.
That's right.
Can you give us an overview of what people are looking at on the ballot this November?
Yeah, next Tuesday there will be 38 issues on – actually 39 issues on the ballot throughout the state, one bond issue and 38 libraries will have levies on there. There will be one combined levy down in Brown County for two levies. It will be a countywide levy. And so it's actually 38 issues involving 39 libraries. New levies, there will be 28. And the first time who have never been on a ballot before will be 18. We've got another three that will be seeking renewals, four that will be seeking additional, and one new or replacement. This is by far the most we've ever seen on any single ballot in the state since we've been keeping records since 1980.
So there's a lot of people out there that have never run levy campaigns. Are they coming to you for help or advice, or how do they proceed?
We have been providing a fair amount of advice. We've been doing a couple of workshops for them. Many of them made the decision right after the state budget was approved in August, or in July it was approved, but in August they made the decision to go on the ballot. So they have not had a lot of preparation time. So we've spent a fair amount of time, particularly with the brand new or those with brand new levies to go on the ballot. Helping get the paperwork in order to do that, to work with our local taxing authority, because a library cannot pursue a levy on its own or any taxing issue on its own. They have to work with either the school district or municipality or the county to do that. So we've had to help them through that process, as well as give them advice on how to campaign and so forth. So we've been working pretty hard to make sure that we're successful. And in the past, we've seen very good success with library levies throughout the state. Going back to 1980, we've got a record of about 72% success rate on any single ballot.
I would imagine it's a lot like Children's Services. Who doesn't want to give to their library? Ohioans are very proud of their libraries. It has a fantastic system of libraries. But there's so much other stuff on the ballot as well. There's school levies. And I'm wondering about the relative advantages or disadvantages of going through, depending on let's see, the relative advantages or disadvantages depending on which government entity you work through. Would it be an advantage or a disadvantage to go through the school district, for example?
I think that changes from community to community because in some areas there's very good support for the school and that translates on then to the library. In other areas, because the school may be going after such a high millage, the public may say, wow, you know, I would like to support it. I just can't afford it. But they would say see a much lower millage for the library and therefore pick and choose between the two. So I don't know. We've seen a lot of consistency through the state over the years, but it does vary from community to community.
What's Bexley doing, Susan?
Well, we are a school district library.
Oh, you are. Okay,
we
you
are a
ready.
School
okay.
district library, and you know, we're very lucky. The Bexley community tends to support education, and the library fits into the category of education in my mind. And so, we're really hoping that we get their support.
Does the district have a school levy?
Not this year.
Not this year. Right.
That's careful planning, I assure you.
And Sue Ellen, what about Pickerington?
Well, we also are a school district library, and there is no school levy this year. That was the plan on the part of the Board of Trustees to try to go at a time when there would not be a school levy on the ballot. So we had chosen this fall as our opportunity probably about 18 months ago.
You were thinking that far ahead then.
We were thinking that far ahead.
Just waiting for the decision.
It became much more necessary with the budget that was adopted in July. I mean, now it's vital.
What do you do with – you have so many fewer people to work with, so many fewer employees, shorter hours. How do you run a levy campaign, too? It's like a whole other thing you're doing, isn't it?
Well, we actually don't run the levy campaign. We really have to count on the community for doing that for us. We don't campaign ourselves. We provide.
It's just like then any other public entity.
Absolutely. Okay. We provide the people that run the campaign with the facts about the library, and then they are wonderful about taking the ball and running with it.
Has that worked as well in Pickerington?
Yes, I have a core of good volunteers who have really worked very hard.
Okay, we're going to take a short break. You are listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We are talking about the big library cuts that libraries across Ohio have been facing over the past several years, whether it was funding freezes or outright cuts. Libraries in Ohio get a percentage of the state revenue. And this summer, state lawmakers, to staunch the bleeding in the state budget, decided to, among many other things, cut the library's percentage of the state revenue. If you'd like to join the conversation, call 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Give us a call. Join the conversation on All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
On Talk of the Nation, we like to be clear about what we're talking about, whether it's movies.
A B-movie was a movie that was made specifically to be on the bottom half of a double feature.
Or the auto industry.
One mid-level executive at a top automaker told me, well, 30 years ago, we were a car company that would occasionally lend money to our customers, and now we're a bank that makes cars.
Talk of the Nation. Clear, straight, open. From NPR News.
Talk of the Nation begins this afternoon at 2 o'clock, and today's Wednesday, so NPR's political junkie is stopping by to talk about Virginia, New York, and New Jersey elections. That's coming up on Talk of the Nation at 2.
Support for WOSU comes from the Columbus Museum of Art and Franklin Park Conservatory, presenting Chihuly in Columbus, two exhibitions featuring the work of master glass artist Dale Chihuly. More information at chihulyincolumbus.com.
Currently 52 degrees in downtown Columbus. Gray skies today. There may be a little bit of sunshine this afternoon and a high of 58. Clear skies tonight and a low of 45.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're talking about the dire straits of Ohio's libraries. Across the state, they're facing big, big cuts. Many, a record number, have put levies on the November 3rd ballot in hopes that they can stay alive. But If you think that's the worst of it, think again. There are more. Everybody knows that state revenue continues to downsize, for lack of a better word, and so do the libraries. They're bracing, and even if their levies do pass, they're still going to face more cuts. And if the levies don't pass, what's going to happen? Doug Evans of the Ohio Library Council, tell us about what librarians and library directors are talking about across the state in terms of future cuts.
Well, as we look back at where funding was in 2008, it was $450 million throughout the state for the 251 public library systems. Projections from the Department of Taxation for 2010 show an amount of $336 million. So we're down probably almost 25%, a little over 25% as compared to 2008. That translates to the same amount that the libraries were funded at in 1997. So we're looking at an 11-year swing of funding. And during that time, I went back and looked at what the rate of inflation was over that period of time. And cumulative rate of inflation was 30%. So we're going back 11 years of funding while we're dealing with increasing costs of doing business. And so the libraries throughout the state are looking at significant changes, whether their levies pass or not, as to whether or not they can continue to sustain the level of programs, services, staffing, materials, hours, so forth, that their communities have become accustomed to.
Right. Was there a point, the apex for libraries, where all of a sudden everything was working right? You had enough money. Of course, you never have enough money. But you were able to bring in more computers. You were able to start more children's programs and all different kinds. Libraries do so much more than just loan out books now. So when did that big growth period occur?
The high point of state funding for the public libraries was around 2001, where the amount of funding was $495 million.
And that's because of state revenues being so high.
That is absolutely correct. And the legislature traditionally has been very supportive of public libraries. And we certainly recognize the situation that the state is in and empathize with their decisions that they have to make. But at the same time, we also recognize the value of public libraries throughout every community in the state. And needless to say, we don't want to see them cut, and most communities don't want to see them cut either.
Yeah, when you talk about the bricks and mortar of our society, you think of schools, mm-hmm. libraries, hospitals, things like that. And they've all taken a hit. Everyone's suffering right now. What some folks, though, and I'm reading different conversations on the internet about library funding and about this issue, I see a lot of the same criticisms of libraries or suggestions about how libraries could cut that I see for the school districts. Like, there's too much fat. And there's too much fat comment. And they say that they've gone well beyond what they ought to be doing, which is loaning out books. And, now they're DVD stores, handing out free DVDs. Now they're babysitters doing all these children's programs. Now they're an employment agency so people can come in and look for jobs on the internet kind of thing. How do you respond to that kind of comment? Sue Ellen?
Well, we do more than just loan out books. What a lot of people don't realize, I believe, is that libraries perform a lot of social services work. We have a number of patrons who've had to disconnect their home internet because they're unemployed. So we're there for them to come and fill out job applications. They're required to fill out so many applications. If you don't have home internet, it becomes a stumbling block to fulfilling your obligation to maintain your benefits. A large percentage of Ohio's children enter kindergarten not ready to learn to read. And that's been a real focus for the public libraries over the last year, is to improve that young literacy level so that children begin school ready to learn and ready to read, to become productive citizens of the state.
Yeah, Jennifer Smith Richards in the Columbus Dispatch just wrote about that. What a high percentage of kids in certain districts and are not ready. They don't even know what the line across the page is or to read left from right. We have an email from Chris, kind of on topic right now. With the internet and everything online, do we still need libraries? That's his first question, and we'll get to the second question. Susan Studebaker from Bexley, what do you say to that?
Well, gosh, of course we still need libraries. I think in the internet age, there are two things that libraries can really offer the community. One is we often have faster speed access to the internet than the average family has at home, and many people who even have internet access at home and office like to come to the library because they can get their research done in a faster fashion. The other is we have trained staff who is trained to help people find not only information but accurate information. And many people use the internet to find their information today without any focus on whether they're getting the right answer. And that's one of the things that the library can help them do is go through the wealth of information that's out there and get the right information to meet their needs.
It's pretty amazing. You can still call up a library and ask for the reference librarian and a real person comes on the phone.
Absolutely. It's the best part.
It's a really weird feeling, everybody.
It's actually the best part of their day. There's nothing a reference librarian likes more than a tough question.
Did you see a downturn in those kind of requests with the growth of the internet, that people are just going online and grabbing the facts from the web?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
But we've started to see it come back as people realize that they're just getting information and not maybe the best information. People are coming back to the library.
Doug, what do we look at as far as the standards for libraries when it comes to internet use and having access to the internet? Is that just – I mean, I was reading a story about one library that's talking about funding to buy 20 Kindles and loan those out.
The public libraries in the state have been very fortunate over the years. We have created by the libraries themselves, they created the Ohio Public Library Information Network, which – provides broadband service to every public library in the state of Ohio. So there is a very good standard of internet service throughout the state and in every library and every branch that I would suggest is probably one of the best in the entire country. So we have the internet service there, and the amount of electronic services that are now available, whether those be databases, and the libraries are getting into the Kindles now, and they're trying to figure out where their role is in that service. And I think that varies literally throughout the country where they want to be in that that delivery of information and pleasure reading in particular. That's going to be probably the next hurdle. But getting back to the original question of whether or not the internet is going to put libraries out of business, and since libraries or since the introduction of the internet and its popularity has increased, there's always been that discussion as whether or not it will supersede the need for libraries. And I think Susan and Sue Ellen will support the comment that we are seeing unprecedented usage of libraries throughout the state. They are busier now than they ever have.
Yeah, I wanted to talk. I mean, it really is amazing. I read in the Dayton Daily News that the Franklin Springboro Library entertained 2,477 – I say entertained, but, you know, that's my word – 2,477 kids in 1998, and that number more than doubled to 5,442 by 2003. But even more shocking was last year the youth programs drew 24,993 children. I mean, there's been a huge increase recently. Is that because – people need a place to take their, you know, they can't afford to go hang out at the bookstore and just buy books for them, so they're bringing them to the library and hanging out with them. I mean, do people – why is that? Sue Ellen Goldsberry at Pickerington, why is that?
Well, I think we offer such an outstanding value for their dollar that when you're trying to stretch your dollars and stretch the family budget, let's go to the library. I did a small return on investment study this summer to prepare for the levy. And for every dollar we received in 2008, we returned $6.74 in materials and services to the people of the Pickerington School District.
And how do you figure that? How does that?
I assigned a value to each internet usage, because if you went someplace and had to pay $12 an hour for your internet access.
Okay.
So I did that. I assigned a value of $3 to each video rental. Because if you
went
someplace, yes, that was what it would cost. And I assigned a value of $7 to each program attendance, because if you were going to the movies, you would probably pay on average of $7 admission to the movies.
Plus popcorn.
Yeah, I didn't factor in the popcorn.
Well, you know, you're better with me.
I was on the Grandview Library website earlier this week, and they actually have a place on their website where customers can go in and value their use of the library. So you can put in how many books you tend to check out in the course of a year, how many adult programs you go to, how many children's programs you go to, and it just automatically calculates for you the dollar value you're receiving.
Very interesting. Yet again, another independent library. You know, operating on its own. That's very interesting.
Yeah.
It sounds like a good idea. Let's finish up. Well, let's hold that second question from the emailer for a second, because we have Jerry in the air. You want to address that last question?
Yes,
the last
Ms.
email.
Fisher mm-hmm. and librarians, I certainly would. Crisp is probably young. I'm old, octogenarian, and I want to say that I appreciate being able to call the main library, which I did recently. I'd heard that Henry Ford had a meeting with Thomas Edison, and Edison had told him to build an electric car. So the lady that took my call at the main library looked it up. She said, yes, that was in 1896. She gave me the exact date. Edison pounded on the table and said, the young man, you've got to remember Henry was only 36 then, you've got to go with an electric car. And that confirmed it, and I hope that the library is not going to do away with that provision. One other thing, Hard Road, I use the Northwest Library on Hard Road. You know, they were supposed to widen that to four lanes west of Smoky Row, if you're with me geographically.
Okay.
And
what's your point?
they ran out of money. They aren't doing it, and they got all these kids walking along there, riding their bicycles, which I have to do sometimes. And anyway, I would appreciate the gentleman from the main library addressing this issue on being available to get this information. You know, lots of things that those of us who aren't on the Internet really appreciate what we can get from the Columbus Public Library. And thank you very much.
Thanks, Jerry. Of course, Doug Evans, you're with the Ohio Library Council, not the Ohio Metropolitan Library System, so you can't really address that program. Jerry, maybe we'll try to get an answer for you on that later, though.
But I will point out that every public library in Ohio does that. We take in-person and phone questions, and that's exactly the type of question. I was working the reference desk at Bexley Public Library yesterday, and a pastry chef from one of Columbus's finest restaurants was in. She, driving to work, was inspired with the thought of making some very unique yet very natural dishes this weekend to celebrate Halloween. And she came to the library to help figure out how to make black whipped cream and licorice cake and other things. And that's the business we're in. That's what we like to do for people.
Yeah, you never do hear it. It would hurt me to hear you say you're going to get rid of the reference librarians, that you're going to get rid of those people that you can walk up to and that can answer the dumb questions. Because you can go into a library. I call them dumb questions. But you can go into a library. You can go up to the monitors and you can look for your book and that kind of thing. But lots of times we still don't get it, or we don't understand where it is, and we still have to toddle over to the information desk and ask.
One of the most common things that happens in public libraries is people go to the doctor and they're too afraid to ask their questions. And they get in the car and they get upset because they didn't ask the questions about the medical condition they have, and they come to the library. And the library has current, accurate, up-to-date information that they can put this person in contact with.
Okay. Let's take another call. Marty, you're on the air.
Thank you, Ann. I was going to say something else, but Jerry's comment inspired me to deal with one of the issues he raised.
Okay.
In Worthington, the Hard Road Library is a joint operation between the Columbus Metropolitan Library and the Worthington Libraries.
Okay.
The only one in the state that represents that kind of resource-sharing, collaborating effort. But as far as the street project is concerned, of course, the library is not involved in that, but that is on the capital improvement program for the city. That section in front of the library is just in one of the latter phases, so Jerry's wish will be granted down the road. But I did want to comment generally about libraries in terms of the services and whether or not they're diminished as a result of all the new media out. I agree with Doug. They're actually increasing in use because of all the new media. People need to understand how to use that media. They need to understand how to evaluate the information they're receiving, so they come to libraries for that kind of information, as well as homework help, as well as digital. We have what we call in Worthington four libraries. We have three physical facilities, and we have an electronic facility where people call in, and that's just like going to the library, as Susan was pointing out. You just drop in electronically and ask your question about black whipped cream or whatever it may be. And
chocolate.
You get responded to by a very competent professional librarians, who, and you never have to darken the door. So in Worthington, our increase in circulation over last year is 12%. So that doesn't indicate any kind of decrease in the use of the facility. In this economy, helping people with their job resumes and accessing business information has grown as yet another way the library is becoming staying relevant to the times. So appreciate your show, and hope this information is helpful to supplement what people can say.
That's great, Marty. Thanks a lot for helping us out with the hard road, crust, and chill.
Okay.
Hey, I want to thank Marty for bringing up the Homework Help Center. This is one of the things Bexley Public Library has told the community we will proceed with once this levy passes, and we cannot wait to offer this service to the community. Libraries across the country have found that Homework Help Centers really help connect the library with the community and provide something that families in the community really need.
Okay, we're going to take another short break. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We are talking about library funding cuts, and how libraries are responding to that with cutbacks and levy requests. If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. I have another email waiting to talk to. You can listen to that question when we get back from All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
This is Capital City Radio.
Welcome to Sound Opinions from Chicago Public Radio and American Public Media. I'm Jim DeRogatis.
And I'm Greg Cobb.
This week, Jim.
And this is Capital City Radio.
I would rather go blind, boy.
Capital City Radio is the center of music and news. The new service from WOSU. Online at capitalcityradio.org. You're listening to WOSU 820 NPR News, 53 degrees in downtown Columbus at 10:38. Stay right here for hour two of All Sides with Ann Fisher with Ann's first open forum. Ann will open up the lines to callers for an open forum discussion at 11 o'clock, right here on WOSU 820 NPR News. And remember, you can hear more from WOSU anytime at WOSU.org. Listen to All Sides with Ann Fisher whenever you want with the online archive. Podcast new and archive shows from all the guests and topics. Podcast All Sides at WOSU.org. In the weather forecast for today, gray skies, maybe a little bit of sunshine later this afternoon, a high around 58. Skies clear overnight tonight, a low of 45. Sunshine for Thursday and a high of 68 degrees. A few clouds Thursday night and a low of 52. And then rain is likely for Friday and a high of 67. And now back to All Sides with Ann Fisher.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We are talking about library cuts, library response to cuts, library levies. All of it's happened very fast, it seems like, but really the cuts have occurred over the course of many years as the state froze its spending on libraries. Meanwhile, of course, costs went up. So even though the funding levels were just frozen, when your costs go up, it feels like a cut. So when the state this summer decided to cut the actual percentage that libraries get from state revenue, then that was the big kahuna cut, and they may be facing more as state revenues continue to decline. So we're talking with Doug Evans of the Ohio Library Council, Sue Ellen Goldsberry of the Pickerington Public Library, and Susan Studebaker of the Bexley Public Library. Thanks again for joining us. Here we got this, the second part of the email from Chris. and what's up with the high salaries of library staff. So, you know, I'll just let you have at that and explain, because I don't, a lot of people really don't know. It's one of the other things I was going to bring up earlier was someone said, why can't they just bring on more volunteers? Why can't you have more of a volunteer force instead of paying for librarians? So, Sue Ellen, you're nodding vigorously. Tell us, why the high salaries?
Well, and my staff doesn't believe that library personnel are highly paid. Currently, I have several positions which would pay minimum wage to begin, our shelvers, custodial type things. The last time we hired a full-time MLS librarian,
which is a
that's a Master's of Library Science, okay. A professional. They have a graduate degree. They have studied and learned how to do reference work and library work. Our starting salary was $36,000 a year. That's not a whole lot for someone with a master's degree.
Mm-hmm.
We are public servants. We provide a public service. We have no union representing us, and I don't believe my staff is underpaid for the good personal.
You mean overpaid?
Overpaid.
Mm-hmm.
I might believe they are underpaid for the good personal service that they offer you, where you get a credible, correct answer when you ask.
When you hire a librarian to work in a library, because librarians work in lots of different mm-hmm. capacities, too. I know they worked at the Columbus Dispatch. They're fantastic there. Every newspaper I've ever worked at, there have been fantastic libraries and librarians, again, who are well-trained professionals. But when you hire one into a library, are they usually experienced, or you get them fresh out of graduate school?
We, in my memory, and I've been at the library
for a long time since.
Yes, it's been a long time since I've had the opportunity to hire. I look for someone with some experience.
So it's not just somebody fresh out of grad school. Is that your experience too, Susan?
Well, I think it's both, and it really depends on the job.
Mm-hmm.
We're looking for, no matter what library is, we're looking for people that have a great interest in customer service, that know the resources to give accurate information, people that can inspire children to want to learn to read. So we're looking for all sorts of people, and some with experience and some without.
Doug Evans of the Ohio Library Council, is that pretty typical? Can you give us a little overview of what librarians with MLS librarians earn in Ohio?
The recent study I saw that was done by, I believe, Library Journal indicated that it's the average starting salary for a new librarian in the state was around $41,000, if my memory serves me correctly. I guess if anybody's listening from a library, they could call and correct that. But everything has a relative value. So, you know, the email indicates what's up with the high salaries. Well, high compared to what? And, you know, if the emailer believes that if that's too much, then what is appropriate? The libraries have to dictate what they can afford to pay someone and to provide that service. And they do that based upon the salary comparisons that are done throughout the state for like positions, and it depends on the geography of the state. You know that the cost of doing business in Columbus is much higher than doing it in Dark County, for example. So you're going to see variances all across the state on how much someone gets paid for doing the same
just
job
like in
or different
districts.
Job. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really tough to make the broad brush of decision or opinion that libraries or anyone for that matter is paid too much or too little for the job that they do.
Do you hear that though? Have folks been questioning you about what do librarians make when you're pursuing the levy campaign?
I haven't had any questions like that.
No, what I hear much more often is how much they appreciate the staff at the library and what a great job that staff does. I think it's also important to remember that very few staff members at a library are actually librarians that have a master's degree. The majority of people that work in the library are not actually master's degree librarians.
Are they just wannabes, or they're just doing work that doesn't require In other words, they're librarians in training. They want to be a librarian someday, or all different variations on a theme.
We bring a great diversity to the staff of libraries, which is really what makes it great.
What about the kids' programs? Are you going to have to be cutting back on that sort of thing? There's just we talked earlier about that massive growth in the Dayton area library. That was fantastic. I mean, 24,000 some kids participating in a library program. It doesn't seem possible.
Of course, if we're not successful next week, we've cut so many other places. If I have to cut more staff members, then there will be fewer children's programs. And I hate to see that happen. I started out as a children's librarian, so that's my love. But I think that the children's programming and the services that we offer to children are so very important to set them on a path of lifelong learning that will break my heart if I have to cut children's programs.
I agree totally. Children are our future, but we are going to have to make really tough choices if we don't have additional funds. All of the easy cuts have been made. The next round are really going to be hard.
Well, they didn't feel so easy when you were making them, though, I bet.
Absolutely not. But we survived them.
You know, last spring or maybe it was this summer, I read that Bexley might be considering a merger with the Columbus Metropolitan Library. I suppose folks have wondered why Pickering doesn't consider something like that for the economies of scale and so forth. What are the advantages and disadvantages of doing something like that? What do you all think about that?
Columbus Metropolitan Library System is an exceptional library system. There is absolutely no doubt about that. There is a lot of value, though, to the independence of local libraries, so you can match your interests and your needs to your local community and really be the community hub. And that's what we hope will be the future of the Bexley Public Library. I think the ideal situation for Bexley is to remain an independent library but work much more closely with the other exceptional library systems in Franklin County. No matter what part of Franklin County you live in, you are so fortunate with the libraries you have to offer. And I know Bexley can do more and more to cooperate with those other libraries to bring service across our service boundary lines and make it really seamless for our users.
With book sharing and that sort of thing?
You bet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And technology helps you with that, right?
It does.
Are you cutting back in your investment in technology during this round of cuts? Is that one of the things? Because that's the sort of thing that changes so fast, it's probably hard to keep up with it anyways. What do you think, Sue Ellen?
Well, we have had to cut back. But for a lot of our technology needs, we are members of the Central Library Consortium, which is a group of libraries in Central Ohio. There is now 8 of us, and we've banded together so we can share the costs of the technology and the tools and some even the resources that we offer our patrons. So we've not had to cut back there as much as we have in some other places because with this cooperation, we have spread the cost over more and it has worked very well for us, and it works well for all the libraries in that consortium.
And most of them, all of them are all in the same?
We have Plain City, Pickaway County, but also Grandview Heights, mm-hmm. Marysville. Okay. So it's a nice mix of libraries, and we share materials. They go back and forth with daily delivery. We're working together. We're cooperating.
Already
to get the best use of the dollar. So yes, we get a question. Well, I can't use my Columbus Metropolitan card. No, we're in a different county. We're a school district library. Those boundaries and that authority was set in the Ohio Revised Code many years ago. Mm-hmm. So it's not a merger would not be an easy, quick thing to undertake.
Doug Evans, Ohio Library Council, how do other states fund their libraries? Is it like Ohio, or is there another way to do it?
Well, Ohio is probably one of the most unique states in the country as far as funding of libraries is concerned. No other state in the country outside of Hawaii funds its public libraries with state dollars to the level that Ohio has and currently does, even with the reductions that we've seen. And that decision was made back in 1985 when, under the Celeste administration, they made the decision, the legislature and the governor's office made the decision that this was a valuable resource for the communities in the state of Ohio, and they needed to be funded. And back then, the level of funding was 5.6% of the state income tax. So it did generate a fair amount of revenue even then. So Ohio has enjoyed that level of funding at from the state level, and it is much different from most other states. In our neighbors in Indiana, for example, almost all of their funding for their libraries comes from local support, so much so that they do not even share services amongst their libraries. If you live in one community and a library in another community, if you go there, they would actually deny you services because you do not contribute to that tax base that supports the library. Same situation in Michigan and a lot of the communities there. But we would like to hope, and over the years, Ohio has been sort of the bellwether of how libraries should be funded. We have been looked at from our colleagues throughout the country as the way to handle library funding. And now we're in a situation where we're being looked at as dealing with the same challenges that many of our other colleagues around the country have had for many years. And rather than say an example, we are now going backwards. And as far as our funding is concerned.
Because when you have the state funding, a lot of libraries relied on that almost exclusively for a long time.
Absolutely.
You know,
and they still do.
Pickerington also,
and apparently 24 or well, 18 or 17
we have,
others out there.
Of the 251 public library systems in the state, about 65% rely solely on the state funding. So those are the ones that are dealing with it with the challenges the most.
And that meant that in Ohio, there's less of a difference between the haves and the have-nots. That you can go to a beautiful, well-staffed, with all the accoutrements library in a poorer section of town. It would be just as nice and would give you access to just as many materials almost as if you go to some, you know, fancier community.
And that was certainly the goal back in 85 when they started the what was called then the Library and Local Government Support Fund with the state funding, was that there would be a bench level or a benchmark among all libraries in the state, because previously they'd been funded with an intangibles tax, meaning that if there was a high level of investments in one community, the taxes on those investments would support the local library. Therefore, there was a huge dichotomy between the level of quality of service in those libraries. So when they moved to the local Library and Local Government Support Fund, it raised all levels of library service to a common denominator, a very high-quality common denominator across the state. And those libraries who then wanted some additional support could pursue that through a local levy. So you don't see the dichotomy between quality of libraries in the state that you may see in other states. And you know, you've got libraries in New York City that are struggling because they cannot be funded appropriately. You got the Queens Library and Bronx libraries who are really struggling to just even stay open. Philadelphia libraries are literally closing branches because they can't stay open because they rely on that local support. And that's what happens when you go to local support solely for the library services. You tread on very thin ice with those.
Okay, we got an email from Jennifer. She says that getting rid of libraries because, quote, everything, end quote, can be so readily accessed online is utterly laughable. Nothing can compare to the real-life resources and overlooked social service contributions of a library. I realize I may be in the minority for my age group. I'm 26. But the thought of eliminating libraries to cover for the greed in other portions of society is quite scary. Okay, Jennifer, thanks for that strong
Yes, thank you.
Strong message there. And let's turn to the phones. Pat, you're on the air. You have some questions.
Hi. Just want a clarification about what a school district library is. I've heard the panelists mention that a couple of times, and I don't know how that is different from a regular public library or, you know, if there is a difference.
Sue Ellen Pickerington's well, you're both. That's right. Go ahead. So, yeah.
School district library is a legal boundary that was established by the legislature back in the 70s, I think. And it's you know, everybody has to have a service boundary to determine what your population might be, who is your taxing authority, those type of things. The Pickerington Local School District is considered our service district, but just because someone would live out of that district does not mean they're denied service at the Pickerington Public Library. We serve patrons from all over Central Ohio. At one point, we even had a patron in Alabama, but he doesn't use the library any longer. But it's just one of those legal things that is necessary for identifying your level of support, your funding support. When the Budget Commission divides the Fairfield County revenue each year, they have to have something to look at. So we have a service district based on that.
Okay. Pat, did that answer your question?
Yes, thank you.
You're welcome. Doug, if people are passing or asking for these levies to be passed, libraries are, and they get passed, I mean, over time, we're going to be increasing the amount of local support for libraries. And when times are better, my experience with the legislature is that it would be less likely to reinstitute and go back to the higher level since, hey, look at the local stepped up. They're willing to support. Are you worried about that?
I believe there is a concern there that
– I got a little bit of time. I'm sorry.
That if we are successful, if the libraries are successful in passing these levies, it will indicate to the legislature there's a significant level of local support and that they could potentially cut back on the state support. On the other hand, it could indicate that if they don't pass, that there is not local support and therefore – the state shouldn't be putting as much in because the public doesn't support the library. So it could be a two-edged sword, but at the same time, we are going to be out there trying to get local support. We're going to be working at state level to get state support just as well.
Okay. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News. We are out of time.
On the next Fresh Air, send 44,000 more troops to Afghanistan? Maybe just 15,000 more Marines? We speak with Washington Post Pentagon correspondent Greg Jaffe about the military options facing President Obama. Jaffe is co-author of the new book, The Fourth Star, about the four generals who led the U.S. military's efforts in Iraq. Join us for the next Fresh Air.
Fresh Air begins at noon right here on WOSU 820 NPR News. Remember, you can hear more from WOSU anytime at WOSU.org. Listen to All Sides with Ann Fisher whenever you want with our online archive. Or podcast new and archive shows from all the guests and topics. Podcast All Sides at WOSU.org/podcasts. This is listener-supported WOSU and WOSU HD 820 Columbus, and streaming on the web at WOSU.org. WOSU 820 NPR News. In the weather forecast, currently 53 degrees in downtown Columbus, gray skies today, maybe a little sunshine later, and a high of 58. Skies clear overnight and a low of 45, sunshine for Thursday and a high of 68 degrees. You're listening to WOSU 820. Good morning.
Today, my first open forum. We'll talk about the news and events of the day, politics, ballot proposals, library funding, healthcare, the world. At least as much as we can fit into an hour is our oyster. What do you make of Issue 2, the proposed constitutional amendment to create a panel to create standards of livestock care in Ohio? Or what about that casino issue? Is it the fourth or the fifth since 1990? What has changed? Think it's going to pass?
Let's make some predictions. I'm all ears, and if you don't call, I'll just keep talking, and that's not a threat. All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820, NPR News.